Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
Is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Nick Bailen, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts as we talk episode 295. And while technically we're off this week, there is no Bellator, there is no UFC, there's still plenty of news to talk about. We will start, however, because I do want to talk about a couple things, Nick, that came out of UFC Dublin or Fight Night 76 or whatever it was named, 19 things. It showed up on Fight Pass. Two fights I want to talk about. Number one, to take a step back, we had the Ben Rothwell and Stipe Miocic fight that fell out 2 days before. You had the Poirier Duffy fight. Duffy got concussion, right?
Yeah, he got a concussion.
And he was out. So they lost both of their main events. So I want to shout out to Ben Rothwell, because on Instagram, he took the event poster and put X's through everybody and then tagged the UFC and said, "I fixed the event poster." So I love when those guys do that. So what you ended up getting as a main event is Paddy Houlihan and Luis Smolka, which turned out to be an amazing, I mean, even if you didn't care about it, I think from a fight perspective, was just a fantastic fight between those two guys. And technically speaking, was just one guy who just understood how much that grind on the ground takes out of you and was able to capitalize it in Luis Smolka. Because there were plenty of times that Houlihan, even in the second round when it ends, had chances to finish him and just didn't seem to have the gas, even being in a great position. And Smolka's ability to kind of escape out of everything, you know, like his jiu-jitsu is just very much, he didn't have very... I think this is bad to say just because it seems like he wasn't being intentional by saying he has terrible takedown defense. He doesn't really have terrible takedown defense. He's just trying to do something different. He just knows when he gets to the ground, he's going to get back up. And so he allows people to do that. And I don't know from your perspective, given your background, if at that weight class, that's okay. Or as an overarching strategy, if you're just that good at jiu-jitsu, that should be a wise move. But it works for him. He was able to get the submission in the second round and finish rear naked choke. And I just thought literally everything on this card going wrong, I thought this fight was well worth the fight on, you know, watching it on Fight Pass.
Oh yeah, it was for sure. Entertaining throughout the whole thing. It's just one of those things where it's the styles make matchups. And in this case,
sure,
that's what ended up happening. It was watching two people try to implement what they wanted to do and watching who ended up doing it better.
Now, from a striking perspective, I wanted to ask you this question because, you know, your knowledge of striking is much better than mine. And what I thought was interesting is when they got in the clinch and then they broke out, you would see Paddy reset, right? And you'd see Smolka light him up. And it was an interesting dichotomy. You know, you say styles make matches, but it was an interesting dichotomy in strategies that, like, we know that he's going to want to plant his feet, square himself up, and start all over again. We're not going to let him do that. We're going to head kick him in 1-2 all day long, which I think clearly set up the body kick that ended up kind of powering Paddy down, allowing for the finish of the fight.
Yeah, a lot of times when people are when they're in sparring, it's kind of a gentleman's thing. A break happens, you kind of reset, you make sure you're in the right spot, and you start over again. And people that train to do that, when they break and fight out of the clinch, it's a timing thing, and it's hard to deal with because you're used to this gentleman's thing where we're going to reset and go, and it ends up working for someone who can break that timing and start to throw that off.
Would you say from a training perspective, though, then, that it might be wiser? I won't say the AKA way is the way to go, because clearly the injuries would tell me that that's not the way to go, but you know, it speaks to that training adage that what you train in the gym ends up showing up in the octagon. And if you're training to reset in this gentleman's agreement, it clearly might be difficult to turn that off and not be lit up every time you break from the clinch.
Yeah, for sure. It depends on when you're sparring with new people, new timing and everything like that happens. I went to a new gym in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario for a few years, and they all strike out of the clinch. And I was getting lit up and I couldn't figure out how they were doing it. And so after we figured it out, I figured out that I needed to come out high guard and then either jump back farther or reset myself.
Sure. And so you've got, that ends up being our main event. And I don't know what you do out of this main event, because at 125, it just seems like it's easy to go, okay, well, if Houlihan wins, he ends up breaking the top 15, and then he's well on his way to title contention, because frankly, at 125, everybody's a title contender, right? Because DJ just plows through everybody. But Smolka ends up, you know, ending the night on a sour note for the Dublin fans. And so now you're left going, okay, do you move him up? And if you move him up, how far away are we from him going against Demetrius Johnson, when you've got Cejudo is clearly the guy that we want to see next? And then after that, I don't know who we want to see. And I don't know that this fight is indicative of me wanting to see him against Demetrius Johnson, other than it fits with the cadence of the flyweight, right? It was a fast-paced match, and it was just somebody who had a bigger gas tank and a better out-of-the-clinch plan ends up executing his game plan. Other than that, I don't know that I would say that Smolka's ready for that level at this point.
It's tough to say on his ability to be ready for Demetrius Johnson. So far, nobody's been ready for him.
Well, so there's that, of course, right? Is that nobody's been ready for him. But, I'm more saying, like, if nobody's ready for him, then everybody's ready for him.
Yeah, same. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. If he wins, maybe it's this one, maybe it's a couple more that's going to get him going. It's the fast pace. They should show the whole thing in like slow motion because of what's happening during the fights.
Yes.
And to show the skill level that Demetrius Johnson holds as compared to him. But it's the flyweight division. You win a couple and you get your shot. It's the same thing that we're seeing in the 115 strawweight division.
Well, yeah. And because both of them are, well, I mean, 115, I don't think it's been around long enough to say this, but both of them are in the same boat, is that there aren't very many contenders and nobody's figured out Johanna Jędrzejczak, and certainly nobody's figured out Demetrius Johnson. The other fight we obviously want to talk about is Cathal Pendred taking on Tom Breeze, who just destroyed Pendred. Again, wasn't a great night for the Dubliners in Dublin, which, you know, that happens sometimes. It's happened in Brazil plenty of times when the Brazilians just don't come out on top. But the reason I bring this fight up is because we heard last week that CM Punk's shoulder injury wasn't nearly as bad as he thought it was, so he's going to be ready if he was going to fight. I believe he told Ariel Helwani if he was going to fight in March, it would be April, or April, it would be May. It was 1 month off, whatever it was. So lots of people on Twitter jumping in and going, well, remember when Pendred and CM Punk were going back and forth, you know, talking smack? Pendred looks so terrible. Should that be the first fight? And I guess I would love your thoughts before I give you mine, but I thought it was interesting that was... You lose one fight in this regard, and all of a sudden we're thinking a guy who's never fought in the UFC is going to easily handle you.
Well, to start, it's a guy that's never fought.
Not even in the UFC. I just never fought. Sorry.
Yeah, yes. And so you have to take that in consideration as far as what skill level actually looks like. But having a guy that's lost a couple and perhaps doesn't have the skill set that they could, maybe he's going to stay around until he's ready to step in and CM Punk can actually have an opponent that has a name, and they're saying, well, we're not going to fight a nobody. Well, he's not a nobody now. He's in the UFC, so keep him around until it's time for that matchup to happen. I could see that happening,
I guess, but I just feel that with a guy who's nearly 40 years old, who, as you nuanced in the, you know, in the conversation, hasn't actually fought, when you look at what's happening in the world of mixed martial arts, even in the world of Thai boxing, even in the world of jiu-jitsu, right? You see what happens when people have done jiu-jitsu or Thai boxing or traditional boxing for a couple years and then take a smoker and get annihilated. A guy like Pendred is going to steamroll CM Punk. And so to me, if you're going to want him to have a good outing, you really literally either have to find another guy who's 0-0, and or a guy who's 1-0 or 0-1. I just think there's no other reason to do this if you're going to do it. Because if you're going to do it as a ridiculous feature fight, then do the green Power Ranger insanity that people are talking about, right? Like, if you're just going to do it as some sort of crazy side project or sideshow, then do some other novelty fight.
That's the one I want to see.
You want to see the Power Ranger fight?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we're going to be doing that, if we're going to be taking childhood heroes and pending them against each other, you might as well pick one that I recognize. Like, I love that guy.
No, and I know that, but I just don't know that that's why they would bring in CM Punk.
No, they didn't bring in CM Punk to put the Green Power Ranger against
him. But you get what I'm saying. Like, it seems weird to me. Of all of the decisions that they've made, we all know that they lean on the side of business. We talked 2 weeks ago about Kevin Lee and Sage Northcutt. Kevin Lee has continued his campaign against Sage Northcutt for obvious reasons, right? Sage has all of this shine on him, and Kevin is seemingly undefeated except for the Iaquinta fight, which was a really close fight in his first fight in the UFC. So he obviously has umbrage with Sage and is continuing to do that. Will it happen? I don't think it will happen, because I think Kevin will steamroll him and will kill all of the shine that they've clearly built up on him. I don't understand why you would all of a sudden shift gears and start doing odd Pride-esque, Scott Coker-esque, WWE-esque feature fights and go, yeah, we brought him in and we made a big deal about us getting Phil Brooks, CM Punk, as you might know him. He got an injury and then he felt better. And so then he's going to fight Rosie O'Donnell. Isn't everybody excited about that? Hey, feature fight. You know, that's what it seems like to me. Because there would be two guys who haven't fought in the UFC, one of which who has a martial arts background, being the Green Power Ranger, whose name is escaping me. But, you know, has a martial arts background. I just think it's an odd thing, unless you're planning on putting the Green Power Ranger on the roster to see what he can do.
Well, in the show, he was Tommy.
Tommy. Yeah, but that's not his real name.
That's not his real name, but that's how I know him.
that's how we talk on Twitter.
Correct.
Me and Tommy.
No, so what he wants to do is, you can see that Duke Rufus is where CM Punk is training at. And the WWE, like, they're trying to put the Phil Brooks into it, but he is CM Punk. He's always going to be.
Sure.
So it's going to be a WWE-esque show because he still is his name. That's what he's doing. You can see the timeline keeps getting longer for of when he's going to go. He was going to be a 185-er in about 6 or 7 months, and then he was like, well, I don't know where I'm going to be in a year. And they're like, meh, hopefully by the end of 2016 we can put him in. So I think the opponent is still to be determined. I bet you he's having matches and smokers that no
sure.
one can hear and see in the ring
right.
or in the gym right now.
Well, and you have, not on this show, but you have talked about that in other conversations about when you look at amateur MMA or semi-pro or even pro, that these are most of these matches, you know, you and I have joked about this, that there's 28 matches on a, you know, a regional card. And the reason for that is that, you know, my theory about amateur MMA is it's one guy who's trained his ass off and another guy who's about to figure out he hates this sport. And, you know, you have often said that these are matches that 10 years ago took place in gyms and nobody saw them. So you had the opportunity to make mistakes. Now you're making mistakes as somebody else is monetizing it and you're embarrassing yourself in front of 1,000, 4,000, or 5,000 fans. And so I just, the longer they push this out, the older that he gets, the harder that they're searching for an opponent that he can handle. It's not that I don't trust Ben Askren. It's certainly, I don't think Ben Askren is saying these things to help out the UFC. If you know anything about Ben Askren and Dana White's relationship, he's not doing that. So there's some weight to perhaps Ben's perception of what Phil is doing in the gym, but I don't know that that's going to translate to the octagon against somebody who even is at the bottom of the 517 people they employ right now.
Yeah, well, the thing that he does have going for him is that he... Phil Brooks, we're going to start referring
sure,
to him
okay.
as his real name
we
now.
Can. Why not?
Yeah. So when Phil Brooks steps in there, the thing he's used to is that 4,000 people. He's used to 20,000, however much the big shows in the WWE can handle.
Right.
So that's not going to, he's not going to be starstruck on that aspect where maybe Tommy, the Green Power Ranger, could be.
Maybe.
Yes. But that's the thing that's going to be happening with him is I think what he needs to do when he is ready is he needs to come in with the thing that he's really good at. Like, he needs to figure out what his trick is. That he's going to be a one-trick pony. I mean, he's going to be okay at everything. But he's going to say, here's the thing I'm good at. I'm going to do it until it doesn't work. And then plan B is...
But at 40 years old with no fights in the UFC, how long do you really think that... That might not even work for two rounds.
No, it won't. But, I mean, he's got
to... I mean, somebody
with
actual fight IQ, that might not even work for 1 minute.
Well, my favorite thing is, I mean, I would love to see him come in and just be the most well-rounded, mid-tier, 170-pound fighter that just goes, like, you know, 6-3 in his UFC career and retires. And I'd love to see that. I just don't see it happening.
I don't see that happening either. The other thing that happened over the weekend is there was quite a bit of conversation about the Reebok deal. And that conversation stems from their second or third most idiotic thing that they've done in the relationship with the UFC, and that is that they put out a UFC Ireland shirt over the weekend to get ready for UFC Dublin. And on the back, it said, choose your territory or pick your territory or something like that, which if you know the history of Ireland, that we're already bordering on something that, you know, you don't talk about. The other problem with that is they put choose your territory or pick your territory. I don't remember the name. And then forgot to include Northern Ireland in the graphic. Like they lopped off half the country.
Well, for everybody that doesn't know what I do, I am a graphic designer as a trade.
Yes. Yes, sorry.
That's huge no-nos.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the same company that spelled flexibility wrong in the PowerPoint when they presented the stuff to the universe and spelled half of the fighters' names wrong. So clearly, checks and balances of design concepts is not their strong suit.
Yeah, for sure.
But I just think there was an article that was put out talking about how we should probably cut bait and run from this deal if you're the UFC because it's just, it's not working. We talked about it 2 weeks ago that we roll with a lot of people that like this sport and a lot of people that like this sport on a very, very high level. Watch almost every event, get every single pay-per-view. And I don't know if that's changed in the last 14 days for you, but since this agreement, I've never seen a fight kit in real life.
I don't know how many they've sold. I mean, they're probably keeping all their numbers secret.
Right, yeah.
Telling everybody it's going well.
Yes.
But... as I've seen, and this isn't an original thought, but you have a bunch of guys walking out in 1980s disco tracksuits. It's just not something that people would take in. They don't want it. It's not personalized for each player. That's what I thought was going to happen in the Reebok deal. I thought, oh, great. I like Reebok. I'm a big fan of it. I like what they did with CrossFit, and I like what they did with a lot of these different brands, maybe more of a niche market, but it's all right. And they haven't done that yet. It looks like they said, ooh, geez, we ran out of time and let's get these out there quick. So you're black and you're white and that's how the color palettes are going to work.
And, you know, I can understand at least in a boardroom how that might seem reasonable because as you're trying to get new people into the sport, it's really difficult, especially, you know, even if we use this weekend or any of the fight nights that happen in Brazil. What you see is there's some regional fighters, and those regional fighters might have really difficult names to pronounce. And the casual fan that's never watched or watches only when Tito Ortiz fights or has heard of Brock Lesnar or knows who John Jones is, to get them introduced, it's much easier to understand a fight with guy in black shorts fighting guy with white shorts, right? As opposed to sometimes, you know, before the deal, and again, I'm not defending this deal, as you'll see in a second, but before the deal, you and I could essentially wear the same shorts, and then nobody would have any idea what's going on. Right.
Yeah. Especially when you have two guys non-tattooed that look exactly like each other. It's hard for the commentators to even talk about it sometimes. So I get that. But I mean, why not like red and blue? Like add some color. And then the champ is black.
You mean like the corners?
Yeah. Like the corners. It would be really easy to keep that in.
So there's that. There's obviously all of the problems they've had with the gear. The fact that I don't really see it anywhere. And then you see a guy. Well, number one, you see guys. You see Weidman did it right before we started doing this podcast, put out another photo on Instagram of what he's using with the boxes of the Reebok shoes after he's thrown the Reebok shoes in the trash, what he does with the box, like how he repurposes the boxes for things. Like, you have high-level fighters and even mid-card to mid-high fighters. You've got Weidman doing this. You've got the rumors that... Benson Henderson is so sick of this deal that when his contract's up, he's going to test the waters at Bellator or elsewhere to see what he's worth. You've heard that was one of the reasons that Phil Davis, I mean, aside from Phil Davis's record, but one of the reasons was financial, is that he needed to go someplace where he could still make a living. We talked about Brendan Schaub no longer fighting because he makes more money doing all of this other stuff, and this Reebok deal doesn't make sense. And then, like I said, a guy like Miles Jury writes this blog post that breaks down essentially what the cost is to do a camp, right? So if we imagine that the fighter walks away with 10,000 to show, 10,000 to win, and these are his examples. So fighter wins the fight and shows up. His costs at this point are $2,000 for the gym and the team, $4,000 for his management, $6,000 for taxes, $500 for medical, $1,000 for coaching, and $1,000 for miscellaneous expenses along the way. A total of $14,500. Meaning that the fighter's profit is $5,500. Now, That sounds like, oh, for one night for 15 minutes, oh, that's, I'd love to do that for a living. But let's remember that Neil Magny is the only person on the roster save for Ben, save for Cerrone, that's fighting four or five times a year, right? And when you look at these numbers, you know why Magny's fighting four or five times a year, because he's now he's clearing, without outside sponsorship, he's only clearing $25,000.
Well, and that's the big explanation of why I justify TJ Dillashaw moving to the Muscle Farm gym or Elevation, wherever that would be. He's getting paid to be there, and maybe that's going to be a little bit more of the story, but that doesn't mean it's right. I think that the sponsorship, I miss it. I loved seeing what the guys would come out with.
Well, and then when you, so now let's say that the fighter loses. Okay, now it looks much more ugly. $1,000 for the team, $2,000 for management, $3,000 for taxes, $500 for medical, $1,000 for coaching, $1,000 for miscellaneous. So a total expense for your 15-minute fight is $8,500, meaning you net $1,500.
Well, I mean, don't forget all of these mysterious discretionary bonuses that Dana White likes to bring up when people start talking about that.
He does, but that doesn't necessarily mean, A, you... Well, first of all, if you only made, you fought three times a year and you only made $4,000, I would hope your boss would give you some actual money to live, because you can't live on that. Two, it doesn't mean you're getting a bonus every time that you fight. And three, that's why you read this week that Ian McCall and Misha Tate are like, look, I don't know that I can do this anymore. My brain's still intact. I'm smart. I've got other stuff I could be doing, and making $1,500 and, you know, they make a little bit more than that. But, you know, making $1,500 to lose to Ronda Rousey, who's going to make $1.1 million, doesn't really make very much financial sense to me.
I completely agree with you. I was just bringing up some of the points that Dana White likes to do.
And I know he will, but I just think this deal clearly doesn't benefit the fighters, as they're all of them are revolting in one, in whatever way that they want to choose. But universally, none of them are saying that's awesome. And I think when stuff like this Ireland shirt happens, it makes the UFC look dumb. And I don't know. I don't know that the cost of this deal, not unlike the cost of getting into the Fox deal. You know, one of the problems, and you see, when we talk about Fight Pass in comparison to the WWE network, you see that even Vince is trying to renegotiate all of his contracts, because he knows that the game right now is trying to race to cord cutting or cord nevers or cord sometimes to get your product in front of them. And right now on the WWE network, you can get all the pay-per-views, right? They've got a much better subscription model for the same amount of money, but they're only doing what? 5, 6, 7, 8 pay-per-views a year. I don't know the exact number. That said, they still can't put Raw and SmackDown on the streaming service until a certain time elapses. This is the same issue with Fight Pass. So when you have a fight on Fox Sports 1, which doesn't have the reach that Fox does, it can't end up on Fight Pass till 90 days later. And so when you've got these deals with TV stations for distribution, which you needed at the time, but now maybe you don't, you've got to try and renegotiate those things. When you're looking at this clothing thing that is clearly crippling your employees, you fired Stitch Duran over it. Every fighter is revolting over this. You've got guys writing blog posts showing how much money people are making. You've got Chris Weidman making dioramas out of the boxes while he throws the shoes out. Like, none of this is good for anybody involved. It's not good for the UFC. It's not good for the fighters, and it's certainly not good for Reebok.
Oh, I completely agree with you. One of the things that they have going on is I really feel like this is their they've made a lot of bad decisions. I'm not saying that the UFC is perfect in everything that they do, but this is their first major public blunder that isn't going away. They've been able to sweep everything under the rug, but they're in contract now. So obviously every time Dana steps onto the mic, he has to be positive about it, because he's in. He has to be. Mm-hmm. There's no option here. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen as it plays out. I don't know how many years this is for and what they're planning on doing with it, but it's going to hurt them a lot if there's no way to get out of it.
Well, I'm waiting for Bloody Elbow to finish their report on the UFC financials, because they started a really, really interesting report this week that, if you haven't had a chance to read, the first version is out. And when it's over, I do really want to spend 20, 30 minutes like breaking it down. But when you look at the initial financials, they're... jump from when they bought it to modern day, the this disparity in cash between them and their employees just only gets bigger. And so I'm with you. I don't know how they're going to get out of it or if they're going to get out of it or what they're going to do to it, but it's certainly something that is holding them back at this point on a lot of levels. Because if you got fighters like a guy who's been a company man the entire time, like Henderson, you know, Benson Henderson, that is, looking like, maybe I'll go to Bellator, because, I mean, I'll clearly kill everybody in Bellator, and then I can get whatever sponsor I want, right? I don't have to deal with this crazy deal. Or Misha Tate's retiring, or Ian McCall is walking away. And I'm just going to be fascinated to see how they try and, like you said, sweep it under the rug or move around it or adapt it in some way or shape or form that helps the fighters. Because that money that I just told you, nobody would do that job.
Yeah, well, I think that a way to be able to step out of this whole thing would be to start a little bit more of the personalization. So the UFC has done a really good job at branding themselves. And so you don't go to watch a particular fight. You go to watch the UFC.
Sure.
You just know what's coming up. It's the UFC. The fighters are the secondary. But they were able to brand themselves within that and be able to stand out in different ways. And some of that was who sponsored them. I mean, the rifle company, Browning, who sponsored...
My guess would be Hendrix, right?
Yeah, Johnny Hendrix. Yeah, so he's sponsored by them, and that makes sense to me. Cowboy sponsored by Budweiser.
Totally.
I absolutely love it. And he's figuring out ways to do it himself and get himself out there in different ways and keep those sponsors, but it's harder for him. So I think if Reebok is going to continue doing this, like, why not have Reebok be the brand that they're wearing and have their sponsors on it, like working with them, and then let that personalization happen and have Reebok work with the fighters to give it a little bit of personalization for their walkout gear and for their shirts and shorts and everything else that they're going to be doing.
Because you're seeing it on the canvas, and it would make sense that it would mirror each other. So if, for example, to go back this weekend, if UFC Dublin is sponsored by Halo 5 Guardians, as it was, it would make sense that a guy like Demetrius Johnson, who was sponsored by Xbox, should be sponsored by Halo 5 Guardians, because that's what he does.
Well, did you notice that on some of the people that have the exclusive deals, they have a Monster logo on their shorts
as
well?
Yes, they do.
And that's interesting to me because they're
and
sponsored.
Then Jose Aldo's got a different one. He's got some other sponsorship. But yeah, they each have one.
Yeah, they each get one spot for one extra sponsor. But those are the people that have the deals with Reebok. So it's interesting that Reebok says, okay, bring in this other brand. And maybe that's how Reebok is supplementing themselves. They're working deals with these other companies, and they're working it that way.
All right, a couple other things to cover this week before we bounce out of here. Nick Diaz, there apparently is hope for Nick Diaz, which is exciting because I don't know that there's been a single person on the roster for all of the people that talk about how much Reebok sucks, I don't think there's a human being on the roster who hasn't come out in favor of Nick Diaz being reinstated. And so as of right now, they are not going to put his case, this is the official word from the Nevada Athletic Commission, they are not going to put his case back on the docket to discuss. They are having a private back and forth between Nick Diaz's attorneys and themselves, but some of the insider talk that's coming out is saying that he might be able to fight in 2016 by the time this thing is all over. And to reset a little bit for those who may not have followed it as closely as possible, he was suspended on his fourth go around for being popped for marijuana. And they threw the book at him. It was $200,000+ in fines and then a 5-year suspension, which essentially would end his career. It might as well be the Vanderlei lifelong suspension. Why it is ridiculous is, number one, I think most of us would agree, because the drug in question, it's a ridiculous fine for a ridiculous usage of a drug that gets used a lot. Rules are the rules. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying, though, is there were three tests that he was administered that went into this case. Two of them were WADA compliant that he passed. One of them was not, and he didn't. And that's where they're focusing their efforts, and that's where the suspension came. It also was brought to light and given, essentially, to the Nevada Athletic Commission that he had tried to test clean in the UFC offices, which should have been non-admissible to this case. And so there's a lot of things working against him, and they just don't like him and the way that he disrespected them by enacting his Fifth Amendment right. So they threw the book at him, suspended him for 5 years, and so they're now in discussions that looks like his lawyers might get some sort of remission on this because he has not been served. This is what the lawyer said on Diaz's side. He has not been served any paperwork, Nick, that he needs to sign for this suspension. So they haven't made it official yet. It's still in that weird limbo area where, you know, like Anderson Silva pushed it off and pushed it off and pushed it off. So his 9-month suspension is really 8 days because he pushed it off for 8 months and 2 weeks or whatever. It's still in this weird cycle, but looks like maybe this year, or I'm sorry, technically next year, you'll get him back.
I think just because of the public outcry and everything that they have going, that's going to be what ends up happening. And what he has going for him is that he fought a guy that tested positive mm-hmm. for steroids. It's really the best thing that he has going because everyone keeps pointing that out. Well, he fought a guy that, and I know it's his fourth time and the rules are the rules, but that certainly gives him the sympathy card.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I would fight Anderson Silva for any amount of money, certainly not when he's on the juice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. It's one of those things like, would you rather fight Nick Diaz high or Anderson Silva on steroids? Like, neither.
Neither, but I guess, well, I think Nick Diaz would roll better high, so I don't know that I think that's kind of a draw. But if I'm Nick Diaz, yeah, that's totally the card that I'm playing. On top of all of the discrepancies in actual law, parliamentary or otherwise, that were blown in this case just because they don't like Nick Diaz. Ronda Rousey has been doing the route. She was the first female on the cover of Ring Magazine, so another exciting thing to put under her belt. She has not, well, she, I guess that's not really fair. She has addressed what her mother said about her coach, and what she said was, I will handle that with my mother in private. It's really nobody's business. And her coach has essentially said, look, we've got a fight to win, so I'm not going to get distracted by that. She also said that ideally she wants to be known as the greatest ever. She'd like to continue to be the UFC champ. She'd love to try and become a boxing champ. Wants to be a WWE diva at some point, which I think would be an easy transition for her. I don't know. I don't want to say never with Ronda because she's literally I don't disagree with Joe Rogan, you'll never see anybody in the UFC like Ronda Rousey ever again. I get that. So I don't want to say never, but I'm not sure that the boxing career is going to be as easy a transition as any of these other careers.
Well, and she doesn't need that.
No, but I mean, if she's driven by it, I'm just go do whatever you want to do. I just think of those, she talked about being a jiu-jitsu champ. I have no problem imagining that in my head. I just think boxing might be the one. Although her hands are getting better and better and better and better and better, boxing might be the one that might be the most difficult of all those.
It will be the most difficult because her striking is incredible for MMA. It's a whole different world when you start putting in the footwork and how everything moves.
And there's no takedowns and all of that stuff. And then also, this comes as no surprise, but the beloved Fedor fight that we've all been looking for on New Year's Eve, he no longer has an opponent because the opponent he was going to fight was deemed, and I don't know that I've ever heard this, Nick, you can back me up if you have or have not, his opponent was deemed in October to be too out of shape to fight on New Year's Eve.
That's incredible, especially if we're dealing with a Japanese commission.
Right, yeah, so somebody in Japan went, you're far too out of shape, sir, you cannot. So he's looking for an opponent. I don't know what you do in this case, and I'm sure they'll find somebody, but are you going to find somebody is it going to be more or less interesting than who he was already fighting? Because the guy he was already fighting was, 0-3 in MMA, and I don't know that you can find somebody less interesting in that, unless it's maybe CM Punk, maybe?
The most exciting thing about Fedor's next fight, regardless of who his opponent is going to be his walkout. Where he's just stone-faced and doesn't smile and looks like he doesn't want to be there. He's going to fight the same way, and then everyone's going to realize that we feel the same way. Nobody wants to see him
now,
walk out and
do it. Do you think, let me ask you this, because I know that we didn't talk about this the last time you were on the show. Do you feel there's any weight in the theories that he's going to do this one thing, see where he's at, and go back to the UFC? That maybe just the timing wasn't right. He wanted to get one under his belt. He trusts the guy from Pride that's putting this one on for New Year's Eve. He didn't sign a long-term deal, which a lot of people find suspect. Do you think that there's any weight to that?
Yeah, he might actually be taking that and using it to negotiate for both Bellator and the UFC. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to either one. I would be surprised to see him take a 4 or 5 more fights in these obscure way in the back. Like, he's looking for his payday, and maybe it's happening over there. But why is he coming back now is the question. And if it's financial, then he's going to start leveraging himself against it. And if it's just because he loves to fight, which it never looks like he does,
right?
Then it's questioning of why he would be doing that and maybe staying in Japan.
So I guess we'll see what happens with that. Also, Rashad came out this week, and this, save for the Ben Carson story that I'm going to tell you in a second, I think this Rashad story might be the craziest one of the week, in that he said that a fight between him and Alexander Gustafsson makes the most sense for him next.
I haven't heard him say that yet, but
did he watch his fight with Rashad with Ryan Bader? Because I mean, Ryan Bader manhandled him.
Yeah,
and Gustafsson will manhandle Ryan Bader.
Yeah, it definitely that's what would happen in it. I'm sure it's just Rashad picking his fights because he knows that he's on the limited list. And
but nobody's going to book that? Who on earth? See, in all seriousness, I understand what he's doing, right? We all know what Chael Sonnen did to this industry, right? It, when in doubt, yell louder, and eventually you get whatever you want because you're the guy that yelled the loudest. However, you see that all yelling is not created equal, because Cathal Pendred yells a lot on Twitter, loses fantastically, and gets annihilated on Twitter. Paddy Houlihan, right, yells all the time that he's the second coming of Conor McGregor. He is clearly not the second coming of Conor McGregor. So I just don't know anybody who watches that Ryan Bader fight and goes, yeah, you got a couple more in you, Rashad. That was a good idea to come back from that 18-month layoff and lay it all on the line against Ryan Bader.
I think that is coming from somebody who sits there and analyzes everything, and being you, that analyzes all the fights and who it would be and who the next matchup is.
Are you saying I'm obsessed with this sport?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. about as much as I am. And so what ends up happening in that is Rashad does have a bigger platform. He is on all of the breakdowns after the fights. He's on the UFC Tonight. He's on those things. So he's not doing it on Twitter. He's doing it live in front of everybody.
Sure.
So it's calculated, whatever he's trying to do. And so his platform is bigger. So
his platform is bigger. I don't deny that, right? So from a fan perspective, if you like Rashad Evans, you might go, yeah, I'd love, you know, he got the wrong end of that Bader fight. I'd love to see him again. I think there was whatever you want to tell yourself, other than he's, you know, on the twilight of his career and had a great career. There's nothing against Rashad Evans. I just think when it's time to go, it's time to go. And I think it's his time to go. That said, my point is Joe Silva watching that Bader fight and going, you and Gus, that's a great, we should totally do that fight. Because two reasons. One, if he gets killed by Gustafsson, what was the point? And God forbid he gets it all together and he derails Gustafsson, then what do you do?
I think Joe Silva would be looking at that and saying that is a hell of a fight, because he knows that he's on the twilight of his career. He's one of those last guys that was from the Ultimate Fighters when it was huge, right? Everybody was watching it at that time. He's one of the big names left in it. And I think Alexander would go out there and I think he'd win the fight decisively, and it would look great for Alexander. So Joe Silva, yes. Alexander, yes. They both want that fight. I don't know why Rashad's doing it.
You think Gus wants that fight? Because here's what I'm thinking as I'm running this through my head, right? Okay, so I'll buy your Joe Silva argument. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Two fan favorites. We put him on a Fox card. People love it to death. You and I both know, because we've talked about it on this show and off this show, that Gus's problem is he only fights up when there's a belt involved. And not fighting up to Rashad is a really dumb idea. And so if I'm Gus, I don't know that I want to take that chance, because you lose to Rashad Evans, that's a long fall.
Yeah, it is a long fall.
You are a long way from John Jones at that point.
But if you beat Rashad, like, the next fight, someone could be talking about you at least being in a title contender fight.
Sure. Well, but I would say he's already always in a title contender fight. You know, I think he fights up and puts on these amazing performances against Cormier and amazing performances against John Jones, and he just doesn't seem to be able to do that same. It was why is his name? Kenny Florian, right? Kenny Florian wiped the floor with everybody until there was a belt involved. Like, he was the exact opposite. Spectacular performances. And then when a belt was involved, he just could not turn that corner and get to that next level. If I'm Gus, I don't know why Rashad would take it. I agree with you on that. And if I'm Gus, that seems like too big a risk, because like you said, he's got reams of experience. He's already gotten the ring rust off in a terrible performance against Bader. And if he puts it all together and I don't perform like I did against Cormier and Jones, I'm now 8, 9, 10 at light heavyweight. you know, in a division that there's eight other guys that are just as good as I am.
Yeah. Well, the saddest thing about this whole thing, I think, is that we're talking about Rashad as a gatekeeper and trying to figure out where he should be.
Well, I did. But I mean, to your point, I think the name is the gatekeeper, right? I don't know that his skill set is the gatekeeper, but you're 1,000% right. Joe Silva's going to look at that and go, what Ken Evans calls it, right? It's a great feature fight. You could sell a Fox card with Rashad and Gustafson as the headliner. So I don't know that that Rashad coming back makes it so that he's the guy you got to beat to get a title shot. But I think his name and his legacy, it's no different than what's going to happen next week. There is no implication to Belfort and Henderson fighting for a third time, right? There's no implication there. But it's a feature fight that people are going to tune into to see what happens.
Yeah, it could be Rashad, if it's not with Alexander, where does he go as far as being a headline or co-headline? You could put a mid-card, but who's that matchup that would be the next guy that would make sense for him to be that top tier? And that's what Rashad's looking for. He's not looking to be a mid-card guy. That would almost be insulting to what he's done in his legacy.
And I know that Glover is otherwise occupied, but what about, you don't think Glover?
Yeah, I mean, that would work too. Glover is a fine opponent, but I think Alexander is so hot right now that he's the better matchup as far as trying to get way up on that card and finding, I mean, maybe having a countdown show on it and getting all of that done.
And again, I have no doubt about the marketing behind it. I just think when you look, so you've got right now in the rankings, you've got DC as the champ, Rumble, Gus, Bader, Glover, OSP, then Rashad, then Shogun, then Jimmy Manoa, Patrick Cummings, Rampage, Nog, Maldonado, Cavalcante, Corey Anderson, and Jen Belalovic, doesn't matter. So that, you know, that's where you are. And if you're Alexander and you lose to Rashad, you're 7 or 8, like I said. And I just think if you're Rashad, Ovince St. Preux is a great matchup. I think Glover Teixeira is a great matchup for you. Obviously, Rashad wants the Gus one because it puts him one step away from the title.
Well, yeah, and I think that him losing to Gus is not as bad as him losing to Teixeira.
1,000% agree. My point comes from the actual ramifications of putting that fight together and if Gus loses. Like, that's a giant, giant fall.
Yeah, it would be one for Gus, and that's why I think Rashad is looking at it that way. Is if he wins, he's way higher up there against Gus, and if he wins against Teixeira, they're like, yeah, I could see him beating him, and no one really thinks any more of the closer to title contention.
And one last thing before we take off, as always, you can follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Just search WOW Show. Is that apparently right before the last Republican debate that happened last night at this point, Dr. Ben Carson decided to stop by Vitor Belfort's training camp and take an Instagram photo of him to, I don't know, get some last minute prep tips. But two worlds colliding that I would have never guessed in a million years would be Vitor Belfort and Ben Carson. But the Instagram photo proves that that's a thing. So we'll put that up on the Facebook so you can check that out. I don't even know what to say. Next week, of course, we will cover everything that's happening with UFC Fight Night, Belfort and Henderson. We'll also talk about Bellator 145. For those of you who are scrambling on Twitter to find out if it were in fact true that Kurt Angle was fighting Ken Shamrock at Bellator 145, that is not true. Kurt Angle's showing up at the Fan Fest on Thursday. It was not that big of an announcement, Kurt Angle. Stop saying things like huge announcement and I'm going to be at a Fan Fest or not. They're not indicative of one another. So please stop doing that. Nick, as always, thank you for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks. That was fun.
Have a great week. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.